This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Well, folks, it's No Filter Friday. Friday, May 6th, second day of the second weekend of Jazz Fest. A little rain this morning. Hopefully it moves out, doesn't dampen today's festivities. It looks like that's what's going to happen, that it'll clear out of here, so we got our fingers crossed. Got a great show lined up for you today. We will visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll talk about what people are thinking about in the national polls, where President Biden is, what are the top issues that are top of mind for those that responded to the multitude of surveys that are conducted across this country every day. In the second hour, we will visit with Aaron Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy with the Pelican Institute. The BSEE Board voted yesterday to allow graduates to move on because of the pandemic challenges, even though they did not meet the minimum requirements. It was voted down, one vote short of it passing. But the bigger question is, why are we asking and where is the breakdown? And we'll talk about that. The jobs report comes out this morning, and Mark Hamrick, as always, is right on top of that report. And he joins us, a senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. I know he probably didn't sleep last night waiting for that report.
Oh, that's funny. It's good to hear your voice, Newell. I know I need a good night's sleep before this report, so that becomes a priority so I can be wide awake and have the opportunity to be half as alert as you typically are.
Well, thank you, sir. So what does the report reveal?
I think, first of all, Newell, and I'm sure, you know, within the context of all the things you talk about during your show today and on an ongoing basis, in a world of remarkable volatility and uncertainty, the jobs report generally here is a source of some confidence. And, you know, we got a lot going on in the world these days, and inflation is sort of top of mind for just about everybody, and that's the number one irritant when it comes to the economy. But on the other hand, the jobs report is sort of like that proverbial spoonful of sugar, which during other times ought to make the rest of the medicine go down. But unfortunately, these challenges are so severe right now that, you know, it's a little like crying in the wilderness help a miles away. But, you know, from a political standpoint, the White House certainly trumpeting the report as they should and as any administration should. And when we get essentially, as expected, jobs creation of 428,000 jobs on the month, it's 12th straight month of 400,000 plus. In the past, that would have typically been around 225,000, 250,000. 2.1 million added so far this year, and that's only through April. And the unemployment rate just above the pre-pandemic low, which was 3.5%, and there's some confidence we'll get there pretty soon.
So as it relates to industries, what are the takeaways? I did see a top-line report that leisure and hospitality led yet again in this report.
Yeah, and that's probably where the most work is to do, right, because that was the number one area that was hit, and the Labor Department data bears that out, that that's still a gap. We still need to get more people in healthcare. Manufacturing had a strong month, I think 55,000 there. Construction was not particularly robust, but we know there's some issues there with lack of available workers, issues with commercial real estate these days. There's enough office space to go around, it seems. So I think all in all, the distribution across the sectors was pretty good. And, you know, earlier this week, you probably heard Newell that Labor Department also told us that we had 11.5 million job openings as of the end of March. That's obviously a U.S. total. And the number of Americans quitting their jobs hit a new record, 4.5 million. So we still have this tremendous amount of movement on the part of workers. We still have a tremendous amount of demand for workers. And, you know, the business community would say, among other things, that they would put on the top of a wish list that they would have a fully functional Washington, D.C. that would be able to generate constructive immigration reform through which they could get a better pipeline of legal workers. But, you know, you could add that to the list of wishes that probably will not be granted anytime soon.
I heard folks quoting a stat that there are 1.9 jobs for every unemployed individual in the country today. Sound about right?
Yeah, and I do sort of put an asterisk on that number, and that's sort of the way you do the math between that 11.5 million and the nearly 6 million unemployed as of the latest numbers. That's absolutely, you know, a good way to look at it. There's a piece of that, though, that I don't like, and that is there are millions of Americans who are not in the labor force but would like to have a job. That means that they're not looking for some reason. And then there's millions of Americans who are working part-time, would like to have full-time work. And then the other part of that, and so you get to about 16 million when you add all those things up. I didn't do the math newly this morning, but that was the number before this morning. And then the other part is the labor force participation, the percentage of Americans who are either working or looking for work, moved down actually on the month and also is 1.2 percentage points below pre-pandemic levels. We know, obviously, we had a lot of people exit the labor force over this period, and some people retired. We've had some people come back in. If we could get those people back in the labor force, that would help address this mismatch between supply and demand. And, you know, it's interesting. I was able to attend the Federal Reserve News Conference this week, held by Chairman Powell. It was the first in-person event of since the pandemic began. And I think, you know, he's a pretty good communicator, no matter what someone thinks about him or the central bank. But, you know, he's not an economist. He's an attorney. And that probably means that he doesn't want to engage in what some have called Fed speak in the past. And one of the things he talked about was at that 11 and a half million number, essentially that's too many because, you know, you and I have been talking about the job market a long time, and I've been watching it for a long time. And typically it is viewed as kind of the most important snapshot regarding the health of the economy. But here's a situation where we have so many job openings and essentially an inability of businesses to accomplish their objectives or get their needs met. And so the strong job market now almost becomes a two-sided coin where it's a source of job security and ultimately a source or a means by which many workers can improve their situation. But it's also a source of difficulty and ultimately inflation because there's a worker shortage out there. And so, you know, like so many things going on with the economy that at least partly reflects the ramifications of the pandemic, you know, the world still is a little crazy out there. I don't need to tell anybody that.
Mark, how much do you think these numbers are influenced by the unintended consequences of the pandemic? For example, you have a lot of people that are setting up their own little businesses on the internet, that you have folks that are now doing personal services. They're not really establishing traditional legal business entities that we're able to track because that data gets reported.
Yeah.
Coupled with the fact that, are we really following how many businesses have actually closed over the last several years? Because everybody seems to be behind the eight ball in local government looking at occupational licenses and things of that nature. Yeah. And I'm wondering if we really have our hand around that number.
Well, first of all, Newell, I want you to get your colleague to go to the supply cabinet and get you a gold star for asking that question, because I just did a piece with Wharton School Radio, and that was one of the questions they asked me. So I think it's an excellent question, and there's kind of there's the good side of that, and there's the potentially negative sides of it. And the ADP report we had earlier this week, one of the reasons that at least some economists marked down their forecasts since Wednesday for today's number was because small business employment declined in that report. But you wouldn't, to your point, you wouldn't necessarily capture that in a traditional payroll processing company where if it's one person, you know, they're not setting up payroll for that. So, you know, I think about the need to have, and we've talked about this before, and the wonderful community where you work and live is a great case study or example of how small business can be great and why we need it. The other part is that the small businesses of tomorrow are the innovators, the tremendous innovators, and the larger businesses and hence employers and contributors to tax revenue and all the other things that we need of tomorrow. And so, you know, you think about those iconic images of Jeff Bezos or Steve Jobs or Bill Gates working in their garages. And, you know, there was a time when they had no idea they'd be so successful and obviously wealthy. And those businesses are being created today, whether it's in a garage or on a laptop. And we'll know about some of those businesses at some point down the future, down the line. And so this is one of the harder things to measure. You know, we get real-time data, as we've discussed in the past, and things like new jobless claims that have gone back to really historically low levels. So the number of layoffs out there is really not a concern in terms of a macroeconomic thing. And we can probably have some confidence that a great deal of innovation just through business creation or the so-called burst of businesses is occurring. And that will be one of the things that continues to help the U.S. economy to innovate, because with all the things that we have that are less than optimal in our country, I think the business environment continues to be a great one with access to consumers, global markets, financial markets, capital, and all those things, and great solutions for things, because we continue to be a source of tremendous innovation in our country. And that's largely why we have the technology sector that we have and all kinds of other things that we could talk a long time about.
And one of the reasons, the motivation for the question, and I'm sure you're hearing it too, when I talk to business owners and they're struggling to hire folks like everyone else, the first reaction is, where did everybody go? What are they doing? And you know, as you contemplate this and you think about it, is they have to be earning a living somewhere. I mean, a lot of the sustenance programs have gone by the wayside. There's not that many people that win the lottery. I mean, you know, so I mean, where's the money coming from? How are they supporting themselves? They have to be out there doing something entrepreneurial to support themselves that is just not being reported, recorded, or otherwise here. And in fact, if that's the case, then those numbers, where do we get the people to go fill those jobs then? I mean, you know.
A couple of thoughts there. But let me answer your question most recently, and that is, you know, in terms of wish lists, another wish would be a fully functional Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah.
And
probably enough said right there.
Well, right. But it is an answer to your question, because,
absolutely,
you know, it's getting to the point, or maybe we're past the point, where the lack of functionality on the part of federal officials is weighing on the economy. And an answer, the specific example of that is a path toward legal immigration and more legalized immigrants who can provide labor. And so when you see that construction barely budged in this employment report, and, for example, the housing industry just saying month after month, we can't find the workers. And there are other industries such as leisure and hospitality where that would be a similar solution. We know the politically complicated aspects of that issue, but you and I are, I'll say, senior enough, Newell, that we can remember back in the 1980s when Reagan was president, that both sides of the aisle knew that they had to put aside their differences for the sake of the country to come up with that solution. And right now, there's not a path toward that. And so I do think that over time, I want to address another part of the question that's sort of both of the questions, and that is, along with the entrepreneurial part where you may not be capturing a great data set or view of what's happening, is the fact that you've got this big getting bigger piece in the economy where the Amazons, et cetera, are in better position to pay more, and Walmart's kind of part of that as well. And then smaller, less agile, less robust businesses are not in a position to pay those kinds of wages. So there is a kind of similarity between between this divide between the poor and the wealthy that occurs among individuals that also is occurring in business in our country. And neither of those dynamics are healthy because, as we know, the post-World War II success story of America was the strength of its middle class. And America, there are a lot of prices to be paid for when that strength is less than what it used to be and perhaps where it ought to be.
And in many respects, and I think you've said this before, it all comes back to the manufacturing sector here, that where we've lost so much and outsourced to everyone in the world.
To some degree, I mean, I don't feel as passionately about that as some others do, because I think to some degree the economy has moved on from that. But clearly, if we had not had the globalization without some, let's say, some seatbelts attached to that, meaning some solutions for the unintended consequences of it, we would have retained more employment here in the United States, whether it was through retraining. You know, the obvious thing would be to teach people to code who aren't working in manufacturing, and then you'd be able to fill all the technology jobs. But unfortunately, that ship literally has sailed across the ocean. And I do want to mention one thing about that, because there is some discussion right now about so-called deglobalization, and what that really is sort of attending to is the notion that China is going to be losing or maybe has already lost a good bit of its credibility in the business community internationally and with their U.S. partners. But it's not so much that deglobalization is happening, it's just sort of a reshuffling of that. And so that work is going to go elsewhere. And to some degree, it's coming back to the United States as well, because the supply chain disasters that we continue to experience have shown that if you can keep production closer, there are all kinds of benefits to that, including obviously shortening the transportation needed to move those things, to some degree eliminating those transportation costs, and also just having more control over the situation at large. And oh, by the way, you're also probably helping going toward a climate change solution, because, you know, you're not shipping something that needs to have both either an airplane or a ship and a truck or several trucks just to get it all the way across the world.
I just have about a minute, Mark, but do you find that people are getting weary of having these geopolitical issues intertwined with the economic pressures that the average U.S. family is feeling in this country? I kind of get the sense they're kind of done with that, and they really want the path of least resistance. And if that means we control more of what happens in a supply chain and possibly pay a little bit more, my sense is they're okay with that.
I think to some degree. I mean, I think people still do like to shop at the Walmarts of the world, and they may or may not, you know, pick up the item to see where it's made. But when essentially many of the benefits of that globalization seem to have gone away, you know, if you have to wait a month or so for an iPad, where in the past, you know, you could figure you could get it. The same's true of just getting an automobile. Absolutely. And I think we were talking around the holidays that we were concerned that, you know, things that would be purchased for the Christmas season were not going to be available. I think the manufacturers, et cetera, were able to pretty much deal with that successfully. But no, absolutely. If there's no benefit to the current composition of globalization, people want their things, and they don't want to have to pay too much or wait. Absolutely.
Right. As always, we truly appreciate your insight and your time. Have a great weekend, my friend, and we'll be talking again soon.
My great pleasure, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.